This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
And perfect dharma is rarely met with in 100,000 million kalpas. Adding it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning. It really does seem to be the case that the heart of Buddhist practice is what's been called formless practice. And I've been doing some reading recently, and I was surprised at, probably all of you have heard that term before, formless practice, but I was surprised at how consistent a theme that is, at least as far back as Bodhidharma. And there are also indications of it further back than that, even. So it's, if that's the case, it's a little funny to have a style, family style, that seems to come equipped with what people are disposed to call forms. Like I've said before, I avoid that term because I think it's confusing. Especially people who are newer to practice, it kind of inspires them to think that there is some practice, and then the forms are added to that. But as we've talked about before, that isn't really the case. The forms, so-called, are the only body that practice has. And the forms, that is the literal observances in the family style, are actually to help us. Because without them, formless practice would be even more difficult. So, what do I mean by formless practice? The Heart Sutra, which you're all very familiar with, is a hymn or a song of formless practice. So all that stuff about know this, know that is inspired by emptiness. And as I think probably everybody here knows, emptiness is not a it's not a philosophical position, although it's been treated as such. The philosophical discipline in the East and in the West are somewhat different. So sometimes folks who are steeped in the Western philosophical discipline, they'll hear about some teaching like emptiness, and then they'll try to subject it to philosophical rigor. And the results are sometimes a little peculiar. And then instead of a song, sometimes you wind up with something more like a manifesto, which is not really what Buddha had in mind, I don't think. But this theme of formless practice comes up over and over again, and I've been enjoying this memoir by Red Pine, for which thank you again, John and Tom, for enjoying the book. And he's kind of a quirky, interesting guy. Very, very, very well versed in Chinese. And some of you may also know the book by Andy Ferguson. I forget what it's called, In Search of Bodhidharma or something. It was very, very similar to that, in that Andy went to China and went around hunting for all of the places associated with the Bodhidharma story. And Red Pine went and hunted around for all the places associated with, say, basically the first six Zen ancestors. So he goes to all of these temples and sacred spots and so forth, and has various interesting encounters. But the teachings that he refers to, what there are, teachings anyway, people like Huayka, and who's the second ancestor, and Sungtsan. Sungtsan, of course, left us the very famous poem or song on trusting mind or trusting heart. And Daoxin, the fourth ancestor, he also didn't have very much to say, but pretty much if you look at what they did leave behind, their teachings are in this formless vein. And I don't know, some of you may have been at the my slightly haphazard talk on the Platform Sutra at SF Zen Center a while back. And if there was ever a testament to formless practice, that's certainly the Sixth Ancestors Platform Sutra is about formless practice too. And then Huayka and Sungtsan and Daoxin and Hongran and Weinang, all of them also had this flavor in their teaching. So basically, they wind up saying, echoing the Heart Sutra, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no this, no that, no nothing, and no not nothing either. And they circumambulate and simultaneously sing to this empty place, which is at the heart of everything, at the heart of each one of us and of everything. Of course, by empty, we don't want to get all existentialist, you know, and get hung up on stories about the vanity of human existence and all that stuff. Because it's not that kind of emptiness, although I know I'm preaching to the choir here. What it means is that there's nothing there but this ceaseless upwelling of phenomena. And because all of these phenomena depend on all the other phenomena, there's no one thing to point to say, oh, that's it. That's the stopping place, the solid place, the reliable heart of everything is this spot. But there is no such spot. So formless practice is a constant renewal of the vow to allow everything extraneous to fall away from our practice again and again and again. Even in the midst of dressing up and offering things and doing prostrations and stuff, there is this vast, empty heart that is entirely alive. In a way, as we're reminded, that subsumes both alive and dead. So the sixth ancestor and the fifth and the fourth and the third and Bodhidharma constantly say stuff like, there's just this mind. One mind, one Buddha, one samadhi, one liberation. So this is, you know, it's a little challenging. Naturally, we may be inspired to ask, well, how do you do that? And sometimes we're told, well, since there really isn't a canonical answer, why don't you just sit down with the echoes of that teaching in your ears and without waiting for it or searching for it, let that hymn to the formless universe, let that be sung, and at some point you will recognize that your own body-mind resonates with that harmonic. When our friend Robina, Venerable Robina, is here. She had that interesting example of, remember the thing about the car keys? Some of you were here for that. She said, well, it's like, you know, when we truly apprehend emptiness, she said, of course, speaking four times as fast as I'm speaking now, if you always put your car keys in the drawer of the little table in the front hall, always, always, always. And then one day you go to the little table, you get your car keys, you open the drawer, and no car keys. And it's like, wah! So that was her evocation of discovering emptiness. It's like, no car keys. Sort of like, I don't know, no self or no objects, or I don't know. Anyway, that's certainly one way that the song could come to some people, but it's certainly not the only way. And particularly in this family, that sort of phenomenon is, well, it's okay, but it's not especially cultivated, certainly. It's more like over a lifetime or even just a few minutes of practice. At some point, we accept, I guess, that we've been hearing that hymn all along. That hymn, which is at once universal and unique, is always being sung. And from that recognition, the celebration in bows and offerings and so forth becomes quite natural. And it could take really any form. Some people paint pictures, and some people sing songs, and some people walk in the woods, and some people go kayaking, and some people climb Mount Everest, and some people make the sick well. These are all embodiments of the song. And at the heart of everything is this enormous stillness. So formless practice is the practice that paradoxically acknowledges this enormous stillness, this endless song. And since it's rather difficult, as I said, to come up with a even though people speak of method, it's kind of misleading. So instead, some of our ancestors, as we heard the other night in the study hour, that guy says, what does he say? He says, cease and desist for 10,000 years in one instant. Be like an empty incense burner in an abandoned shrine. Contemplate a piece of white silk without any mark. These are all little phrases from that hymn. So in, I guess, a little while, gosh, it's already 11:45, in a little while, we'll do the full moon ceremony, which, again, is just another choreography of formless practice. Just as a footnote, because formless practice is so vastly ungraspable, we need to be a little careful about our behavior, how we treat ourselves and other people. So there are these so-called precepts, which are really just way of stating our commitments to be careful of each other and one another and ourselves and everything around us in the midst of this formless practice. As the sixth ancestor said, precepts too are formless. So supposedly, in that famous talk that became the Platform Sutra, he conveyed the formless precepts to everyone, which basically was just, well, I mean, he could have just sat there and not said anything, but that probably would have been a little tough for people. So, among other things, he gave them the refuges. Once again, are little songs about the gateless gate into formless practice. And also, we heard in our study hour, well, I forget where, but someplace, those Chinese temples, the sign over the meditation hall says the gateless gate. So to the degree that we can, you know, let ourselves just settle our hearts in the midst of this formless practice, then the effort we make won't be so tiring, you know. So, if it's getting really like tedious for us to practice, then we should look at maybe it's because we're dragging something along with us that we don't need. Or maybe we're just tired, in which case, please take a nap. Or go have something to eat. So I've already said quite a bit about this supposedly formless practice. So maybe that's enough out of me, and maybe some of you all would like to say something. Yes.
I lost my keys just this morning.
Well, oh, happy day.
But it wasn't any sort of a...
It wasn't a revelation?
It was not a revelation.
Oh, so that...
Growing, just, you know, walking in circles, checking in all the places.
Yes.
Where they might be.
I know the feeling. Did you find them finally?
No.
No. Oh.
No, I had to come up with an alternate set.
Oh, heck. Well,
it took some time.
May they turn up.
And when they do, may it be a revelation. May
it be a revelation. Well, I'm very pleased that you're also comfortable with formless practice. It's nothing to say. That's very good. So if you can stay for the full moon ceremony, that'd be great. And if not, we hope to see you again soon. And not to bribe anybody, but Cheryl-san, baked a lovely plum cake with plums from our backyard. And if you stay for the ceremony, you get to eat some. So maybe that'll influence you. But thank you very much.
May our intention equally extend to everyone.